Hello, and welcome to Nakubo in Brief, a podcast from the National Association of College and University Business Officers. On this series, we explore the opportunities and the challenges facing higher education business offices. I'm Kara Freeman, President and CEO of Nakubo. I'm excited to be hosting my first Nakubo in Brief podcast, and I am even more excited, dare I say delighted, to be joined by Freeman Hrabowski and Lynn Schaefer. Freeman served as president of the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, UMBC, from 1992 to 2022, yes, 30 years. And I've been privileged to call Freeman a mentor and friend. Lynn was vice president for administration and finance at UMBC and served as interim president of Nakubo from 2022 to June 2023. Just prior to my arrival at the association. And I'm proud to call Lynn my friend as well. Now, this conversation is even more special to me because I am an alumna of UMBC. And Lynn and Freeman are here to discuss their new book, The Resilient University, How Purpose and Inclusion Drive Student Success. I found the book to really be an excellent read. Their many lessons learned through the backdrop of the COVID-19 pandemic and their shared experiences during that time. I found the stories to be transparent and show vulnerability as well. And in each situation, each story that was shared, there's some valuable lesson or nugget of wisdom to be gained. And I can't wait to hear from our guests. Freeman and Lynn, welcome. It is so good to see you both.
Thank you, Kara. Thank you. And we're proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you. And so I'm going to jump right in and I'm going to start with you, Lynn. Should business officers read this book, Lynn?
You know, as we look back on the pandemic and managing the pandemic, business officers and their many staff members really played a central role in managing the pandemic on our campuses, keeping the campuses safe and navigating some pretty tricky waters. I know people talk about when will we get back to normal. We all know that there is not going to be back to normal. So let's learn from what we all went through. Let's learn from that collective experience. Take those lessons into the future. What went well? What didn't go well? And then be better prepared for the future challenges. And we know there will be future challenges. And so the chapters are an expression of what we, the authors, felt were important leadership qualities that help a campus team get through something like a pandemic.
Yeah, there were lots of stories of collaboration, which I really found inspiring. And so I'm going to turn to Freeman. Freeman, why this book? You know, why now? You've included your colleagues and also your then CFO as well as co-authors. Can you share a bit about just the thought process behind this book?
Sure. The book began as an effort to reflect on what we've been going through. It's COVID, as Lynn said, and all the other challenges that universities have been facing, the political challenges, protests on campuses, the divisions in our society, because universities are in many ways a microcosm of a larger society. And so leaders on campuses are facing, have been facing, and still face many of these same challenges in such a way that we need to be learning from the experiences. And so Lynn and I, and two other colleagues, the provost at the time, Philip Rouse, and a senior associate in my office, Peter Henderson, began this process of talking about how to reflect on the period. And one of the most important points about it was that we wanted to listen to the thinking and the experiences of people throughout the campus. And all of us were also working with people around the country, and I'm going around the country and hearing what they were saying. And so the purpose of the book is to reflect, to document much about the experiences and what we've been learning. And perhaps most important, it is to say to the higher education community that the more we talk about what we are learning and the challenges. And the more we realize we have not arrived, it is not a back to normal, that there will continue to be these challenges, the stronger we will be as a community, as a campus, and in higher education.
Yeah, I really think you hit the nail on the head in terms of what's to be gained from the book, because as I read it, I couldn't help but think of really the gift there is in this book of recording the history for UMBC. You know, the book focuses largely on the COVID-19 outbreak and the impact that it had on UMBC. And so I would ask you both along those lines, thinking of the larger higher education community, have we done enough to record and really reflect on this time? There was so much happening during the pandemic, and have we recorded the effects of the pandemic enough? You know, as I sit back, I think of the historic infusion of federal support for colleges and students, and even some of the unique responses of other institutions. So maybe if you both could reflect on that, I'll start with you, Lynn.
It is my deepest hope that campuses across the country are similarly reflecting on lessons learned, on what we all need to do to be better prepared for all the challenges ahead, and there will be challenges ahead. Sharing these stories is really helpful, and I hope that we'll do that through things like Nakubo and other national organizations and national platforms for talking about our lessons learned.
I will say, as an emeritus, president emeritus now, and even during that last period at UMBC, going around to other campuses, what I saw was how much we had in common with other campuses and the things they were going through. And also how mindset was so important. When we think about that period of the pandemic, we sometimes forget that there were other things happening too. Racial divisions, political challenges. And so even though we were focused heavily on the health issues, it did not stop our having to be concerned about student protests, about the society going through quite a bit and talking about divisions in our society. And so it's never a matter of being able to focus on one problem and just work on that. Leaders are having to juggle all of these at the same time. And this is why we talk about focusing on purpose, how we remember why we're doing what we're doing, and how we respond to the question, does higher education matter? Because the media folks, in so many ways, continue to raise the question, are Americans really still interested in universities? And our answer is a resounding yes, that higher education is more important than ever, that we could not have gotten out of that health crisis, and we certainly could not be getting out of the challenges that we're facing right now with divisions in our society if we aren't thinking about what we've learned about ourselves, that we are more adaptable than we thought we were, that we learn to use the technology more than ever, that there has to be the sense of urgency about meeting the needs of our students, and that we have to find a way to use the expertise of the campus. And I want to take this opportunity to say something about Lynn, that Lynn was, as the chief business and administration officer, was someone who was considered one of the most important thought leaders on our campus. And since this audience is about CFOs, it is that I think that our CFOs have to remember that they are thought leaders, that it's not just about the money, which is important. It's not just about the operation. It is about the full entity itself. And so that CFO and our provost together working as a team, and with the CFO bringing a certain level of expertise in execution to it and in setting the vision and working with us to set the vision, what's most important, right? I really want CFOs to keep this thought. The same thing that I say to our chief technology people, and you'll appreciate this, Carol. You're not techies. You're not just techies. You're excellent thinkers. Of all the things I could say to this group, you're thinkers, and you want to be respected that way, and you want to make the point, I understand more about the academic side than you might think I do. And I want to understand the academic side, just as I want to educate you on the other side, as Lynn was doing so often, about how we set priorities, how we determine what's really important. Because during times of crisis, being able to decide what's most important is more critical than ever. And that's that purpose, as we think about, and the academic work. All right. But meeting the needs of students. But at the same time, remembering that we have such diverse groups, how do we talk about inclusion in a way that does not put people off, does not suggest we're only about one group, but that we care about all of our students and our faculty and our staff, including those people who had to be around when nobody else was around. Let me bring that up. You know, it's very important to say that we as higher education institutions have to think about the fact that people sometimes think we are condescending and we only think about the most privileged. And a point that Lynn was always making was to make sure we were thinking about all of our staff, for example, and all of, and the faculty, and everybody else was talking about all of our students who might not have the benefits that some of the more advantaged families had. So inclusion is a critical word here.
Yeah. And Freeman, as you talk about the role of the chief business officer, I couldn't help but remember there was a part in the book when Lynn was introduced to the campus. She had come to the campus and I could not help but think it sounded like the cavalry had arrived. And so when you talk about that chief business officer role of stepping in and you know, quarterbacking in a lot of ways, different issues on the campus, and the collaboration thread really came through strongly in the book itself. And you both also touched on a couple of other topics, Freeman. You mentioned some of the social unrest, for example, and the divisiveness that's taking place just not only on our campuses, but around our country as well. And I wanted to share with you both that one of the stories in the book reminded me of my time as a student at UMBC. I can remember clearly in 1987, there were student protests and students had a sit-in over the Easter weekend, I remember, at the administration building. And in the book, you share other examples about social unrest that occurred even decades later. And you talk about the courage, the institutional courage that it takes to really navigate such situations. So, you know, Freeman, what advice would you give to administrators about navigating adversity or unpopular topics, especially in a time like we have now where there's so many, so much public scrutiny and political scrutiny out there?
I start with the notion that those the gods wish to destroy, they first make angry. I use that from Greek mythology a lot, that we have to remember to remain calm in the midst of the storm. We have to remember there will always be another storm that's coming, and that we are tested. Our character is tested during those times. And before that storm, before those challenging moments, and they're all challenging moments, but some moments are more challenging than others. And you mentioned the 1987 protest when I was there as vice provost. And I said to people in the time of our last protest, please come on in. Let's talk about the issues. It's okay. We protest. It's an American right to do that. But we want to do it with some civility and to discuss the issues. And my chief business officer, Lynn, was very helpful as we went through much of this along with the provost and others. But think about, and this is the point, to think about how to find the common ground and to understand how to build trust. That's that word. Because there will be times when people don't understand what has gone on, or when people are questioning whether or not the leadership of the campus understands what people are going through. And it's so important to build strong relationships with different parts of the campus so that people know these leaders are working to do their best. Are they a perfect? No. Do they make mistakes? Yes. But we need to be open and transparent and say, this is what we're trying to do. We need your help. It's about all of us working together.
I think, Freeman, you've taught me this lesson over the years, that the minute you start thinking about an individual or a group as a foe, as an enemy, you stop being able to listen. You stop being able to understand. And so that's a really important first step, and it has to come before the crisis. It has to come before the protest.
It's so important. And, you know, the culture of a campus, something we talked about in the last book, The Empowering University, about culture change, that the culture has everything to do with the mindset of the people, with the level of trust there is among the different groups, with an understanding that these problems cannot be solved by one group, that we all have to be involved. And for chief business officers, that there is a very important role for them to play in thinking through those solutions as people who understand the priorities of the campus, the way the campus operates, the fiscal constraints that we have, but most important, as a leader, that chief business officer can do what Lynn always did, which was to say, listen, I just want to help. I want to help. And I want to raise good questions. That the best conversations are conversations that can be somewhat uncomfortable. And, you know, I will tell you that, and Lynn was very good at asking very hard questions. That's what I want a chief business officer to do. Ask the hard questions, because sometimes we are so accustomed to doing things one way, we don't realize there are other ways to do things. When she first came, I'll never forget, everybody talked about their priorities, and we always talk about what's important. And she took us through an exercise that really had us putting a mirror up to ourselves and realizing everything can't have the same level of importance. We have to make some very hard decisions about our values and about what's most important and in what order. That sometimes you have to decide some things are more important, as we made decisions about the residence halls or about what amount of money we could talk about refunds or not. What's the order? What's the timing of these things? And that's the point I would make to chief business officers, to use your best thinking to influence the president, but other leaders as they think through the problems, whether it's about COVID or it's about enrollment issues, because Lynn was excellent in working with us on enrollment issues, or when we're thinking about the challenges with technology, or finally, when the crisis comes and we have the protests from different groups, which will always come. If people just accept that, we're going to always have those times when the media will be suggesting, quite frankly, what the campus is doing, when we have to remember who we are, what our values are, and how we must come together to do the right thing for our students.
Great. And that really is a great pivot of something I wanted to ask you, Lynn. You know, when I think about being a thought leader, thinking about our values and also building trust, you know, it takes me to the topic of the value of higher education and the public doubt that's out there about the value of earning a college degree. And, you know, I know you've supported some of our Nakubo work on educating the public about the value of higher education. So I would love to hear your thoughts, Lynn, on where you think college leaders could invest more or should invest more in the efforts of building that public trust and understanding about the value of a higher education.
I think one of the most important first steps is to look in the mirror and make sure that we're doing everything that we can to make sure our students can succeed and to make sure we're not adding to the negative perceptions. The second piece of this is that higher education leaders could maybe sound a little self-serving if they're the ones taking that message out. And so finding champions outside of higher education, giving them the tools and asking for their help. And just talking about what we know is an essential benefit to individuals and to society, I think maybe we can move the needle on this.
It's such a great question, Kara. And as I'm working with universities in different states, different regions of the country, there are certain regions of the country that are more advantaged than others when thinking about how higher education is viewed. We in Maryland are very fortunate to have a governor who is amazingly well-educated and talks about higher education, a system in Maryland with Jay Perman and others, where they talk about these things. I love the fact that we've got a dynamic president and leadership team at UMBC. And so Maryland is a state that understands the connection between higher education and the economy in so many ways. There are many states that have different views, varying views, depending on the legislature. The governor and legislature in Maryland are both focused that way. But we have this challenge in our country of thinking about the fact that only about a third of Americans have graduated from a four-year institution. And many people don't understand the value of both four-year and two-year institutions in supporting families in that work. And so one of our challenges is, as Lynn was saying, to have others who are ambassadors who talk about what that education meant to them. In the 60s, only 10% of Americans have been educated. Today, we're up to a third. We need to be telling more public stories of how this family, where would any of us be if we hadn't had this opportunity to become educated? And we need to be telling these stories around the country and using the word inclusion, because people have become so divided that there's certain language that splits people off and people immediately begin being against higher education. I will say something that's controversial. When I'm in some states and people want to bring up the word woke, and I say, I don't want to use the word at all. No, because it's not understood. People have different ways of thinking about it. It does not help us at all in bringing people together to talk about the value of helping our children become educated. So when the language is divisive, we need to get away from it. We need to think about the concept. What is important? It is that we want children of all types, young people and not so young, to be included in this effort to educate people, to and for your institutions. One other controversial point, people don't realize that the group right now that's most visibly declining in the participation in higher education is white males, low income and working class white males. And we are people not from that group. But I need to say that to say we want to be an inclusive society. We want young people, young white boys and young men to be included in this effort to educate more people, because that says to everybody, anything about diversity is not about dividing people and doing more for one group. It's about bringing us all into this group together. And we have to find language for other Americans, for the 2/3 of Americans who have not had the benefit of seeing people in their families educated, to say, this is for you too. Whether it is the traditional four-year approach or some post-secondary opportunities, we need all of us involved in developing our people, our students, and the people who are older who have not had the chance for education. Inclusion should be the theme for our society.
And just hearing this, you know, reminds me of the importance of inclusion, meaning, you know, the whole, make education available for everyone. And one of the questions I wanted to ask you both as I read the book was just the challenge of educating such diverse groups of students who come to us with different mindsets, different approaches to their education. So, you know, if you have some students you mentioned bringing a transactional approach and others who have a more exploratory perspective, how do you serve a population, a student population with such different backgrounds, you know, once we do get them to our campus?
I'm going to go back to culture. And I think it's important for all of us on a college campus to have the motivation to help all students succeed. And that means thinking about how does that happen for different kinds of students? And making sure that we have the programs, the tools, the approaches that can work for different groups of students.
I like to talk about the genius of the and versus the tyranny of the or. And it's not mine. That's from Jim Collins. But it's so true that it's not the liberal arts or a vocational education. If you're not from wealth, make no mistake, you need to get a job. Parents want their, there's no doubt about that. People have to be able to take care of themselves. I mean, so let's not play games about that. At the same time, when I talk about the liberal arts, and I get goosebumps doing math, but the fact is that we are teaching, universities are teaching people how to think. That's what the liberal arts will do. Teaching people how to think about their future, how to think through solving problems, how to think about specifically their place in the world. And so we get both in the college experience. We give them a chance to think about what might be possible for me. But we're also giving them, and we're also giving them, certain skills. I think that every student should be learning how to think, how to speak well and write well, how to have some value and appreciation of technology, as an example, how to attack or, and really not so much attack the problem, but how to listen for the evidence of all the things I can say. And it's Fred Lawrence from Phi Beta Kappa who talks about this need to make sure that our students can listen to anybody's argument and look for the evidence that will allow them to decide whether it's true or not. Because there's so much information out there that it's so easy to be misguided. You know, and we all would say, Lynn would say, I would say, you would say, we want people to know they have to participate in our democracy and vote. We don't want to tell people whom to vote for. But we want them to vote and to think critically about the values we want to see in elected officials. I would hope that we are teaching our students, look for people who value education, who value helping all students become educated, you see, who value the rights of people to make decisions for themselves. You know, these are the kinds of things that get beyond politics, that will get beyond this side or that side, but should be truths that we consider important for humankind. That's the idea. And so it's that education. You get both. We don't allow people to corner us and say, oh, are you talking about just getting a degree in this or that? Person can get a wonderful degree in English and be well prepared for the workforce because of the skills one gets there. For me, it's about having internships. One of the things Lynn did that was wonderful was having students working in the offices around the campus, learning how to work. You know, it's just very, you know, that's important. Whatever your degree is, you need that practical experience. So, you know, you're not going to be the president of the company the next day or the next year. You right. Get my point.
I do, even 40 years later, like me. So, you know, I think when you said that, Freeman, I think of my experience working on the campus. I worked as president's life at UMBC. I worked for IBM as a cooperative education student at UMBC, which was the game changer in my career, getting that early work. So I do understand that. And then I want to shift to talk even about education from a more broad perspective when it talks about or thinking about our professions in general. And I was glad to see in the book, there were a lot of examples of the reliance of college administrators on the National Higher Education Associations as well, including NACUBO, for our research and thought leadership as well. And so could both of you just share a bit about just how higher education associations maybe have impacted your careers or your professional growth?
I've been privileged to be a part of NACUBO and regional associations and want to just talk a little bit about what that's done for me. First of all of us have things to learn. We are never there. And so having an opportunity to learn through those associations is wonderful, and I've taken advantage of it. It's also an opportunity to hear new ideas, to tap into different perspectives, to find new solutions to problems. One of my favorite parts about being a part of NACUBO is the community, the networking. So being able to meet others who are in the same boat. Yes, there is some commiserating with each other. There is also, you know, excitement about sharing ideas, sharing good things happening on campuses. And I have some very, very dear lifelong friends that I've gained through NACUBO. And then the advocacy for higher education, for the business side of operations is critically important. We talked a little bit ago about the value of higher education. The webpage on NACUBO's website, More is Possible, I found to be a wonderful resource for the personal and societal benefits of higher education. What a tool you've given all of us to make the argument that higher education matters.
And Freeman, I'll turn to you. Yeah.
Sure, Kara. And you will appreciate this. I'm serving right now as the ACE Centennial Fellow in this second 100 years of their existence, and have for years, starting with that group, enjoyed serving as a mentor to a number of the young people in the Fellows program who were thinking about leadership positions and working the same thing on advocacy issues at the national level. You may not know this, that I worked with one of your predecessors before who was very helpful during a time before Lynn came in thinking about some of the challenges we were facing in a younger university and auditing issues and wanting to get advice as a new president, quite frankly, about those matters. And what people don't realize, and business officers should think about this, is that most presidents really have not taken a lot of accounting courses, number one. And number two, I've had somebody to lean on as their business expert, their finance expert. So they have varying levels of sophistication when it comes to the operational side of things, quite frankly, and need a lot of education. I say this in the seminars I work with the Harvard new presidents on, that I had been a provost before and all of that, and you get a certain kind of experience, but it's not the same as if you was a CFO. And so Nakubo was very helpful to me years ago when we were growing faster than we were expecting in research, and there were literally internal control issues without enough staff, and I needed to get more education myself. And leaning on the expertise from Nakubo was really helpful. As we made it through a period, and wonderfully, as Lynn came on and took us to another level, let me give her that credit. Because I should say that I thought we were had arrived at a certain level, and she was very, very astute in saying to me, no, we have a way to go. And she had a great smile, and she wanted to make some changes. And I'm saying, can we make it? If you make those changes, she says, you're going to have to trust me. That's the key, right? And everything she said turned out to be exactly right. And that's, I would say that with her there or not. The point is that that chief business officer, that finance officer has the opportunity to educate the president and the provost about some of these issues. Nakubo is a wonderful source of education for people, as are some of the other groups. Because nothing is more important to me, it seems, than being able to talk with people in the same position who are going through the same things. That's what Nakubo does. That's so important. You learn, because every campus can tend to think it's got such a unique experience. Nobody's been through this before. But there really is nothing new under the sun. Somebody has been through it before. And if you can just make the contacts, whether it's the IT groups and our guy, Jack Seuss, who works with those groups, all the way over to the finance, there are people who can be helpful to you.
Yeah. And you mentioned the word astute. And I think that's such a great word to describe Lynn, who I have to say, with our Nakubo fellows, Lynn is actually our advisor for the Nakubo fellows. She is still, even now, just lending her thought leadership and education and everything to our fellows. So I have to thank you publicly, Lynn, for that.
What a pleasure it is for me.
There is a quote from Emily Dickinson that says, tell the truth, but tell it slant. Sometimes you can give people really harsh or challenging news in a way that the people become immediately defensive. Other times you've learned, or somebody has learned, as Lynn learned years ago before coming to our state from Michigan, that sometimes you've got to give the bad news in a way that gives them a chance to think about it, reflect on it, and then to begin to accept it. Lynn was excellent at telling us when we sucked. In some way, when things
I'm
were
sure
not,
I never used that word.
You never used that word. I'm using that word to get a laugh from everybody. When we really needed to work on some things, and she had, because she'd had other experiences in other states, right? That to say, we have a way to go, right? Without people becoming defensive. And I'm saying to chief financial officers, to your CFOs, developing that skill in understanding how much of the real deal you can give people, the president or others. I'll give you one more example that may embarrass Lynn, but I'm going to say it. I had the tendency to get too involved sometimes in the area of expertise, because I wanted to make sure things were going. And some might say I was almost micromanaging before she got there in some ways, just so afraid things were not going to go right. And we were talking about a certain area in her area. And I said, well, I'll do so. And she says, wait a minute. She said, no. She said, it's my area. I can handle it, which was a breath of fresh air. But I was, and it made me think, okay, when am I becoming too involved? There's a balancing act for the president between big picture, envisioning, inspiring, and becoming too much into the weeds, you see. And it's that balancing, and a CFO can be very helpful to a president in saying, maybe you're getting too involved. It's good to be knowledgeable and ask good questions. But after a certain point, you need to ask the question, have I crossed the line? Am I doing what should just be the job of that vice president? And that was a wonderful lesson for me years and years ago, because in some areas, if the president just wants to do it, somebody will say, well, let him do it, right? As opposed to saying, no, it's my job and I need to do it. But it took that advice from Emily Dickinson. Bet you didn't think you'd have a poet being used here. So, but tell the truth, but tell the same. Learn how you give people the bad news or whatever so they will accept it and grow from that. That's the advice.
Well, and sort of building on that, Freeman, every time we really needed you, you were always there.
But thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. And the attitude and mindset for the leaders, for presidents and others, that she said it, Lynn said it well, we can always grow and learn. We can always be better. Our line that we use all the time was success is never final.
Yes, it's never final. That came to mind as you were saying that.
It's so important. And as I go around the country working with leadership teams, I am constantly learning. And when people say, well, how should we do this? I'm saying, wait a minute. No, I'm not here to give you a silver bullet. I'm here to talk about a process and approach that we use together, because no one president or one CFO can make. No, it's got to be the group, you know. And what Lynn often did as CFO was to bring people along with the problem and looking at the scenarios, so that by the time we got to a conclusion, people said, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's not the CFO is trying to tell us what to do or the president trying to tell us what to do. We looked at the options. And this just makes sense. It does make sense. It really does.
Yeah, Lynn is very good. I've seen her in action in terms of meeting people where they are.
Yeah. Is a big part.
And I just, you know, I shared with you both a little earlier that just the surreal moment for me. And as you both were sharing what I call nuggets of wisdom just now, I'm reminded of just how much I've learned from both of you. And it goes back to what you said, Freeman, about just continuous learning. We are all always learning. And the saying that I hear over and over, success is never final. And so with that, I want to talk about how the book ends on the topic of hope. I really appreciated that. I appreciated the ending with hope. And you define hope as an expectation that what we want will happen. And so now that you both are retired, or I should say semi-retired, what do you hope for in higher education? But for both of you, Lynn and Freeman, what do you hope for in higher education?
I hope that we've learned from our experiences. I hope that we'll take those learnings to face future challenges better, more effectively, so that we can turn around the opinion of public about higher education.
Yeah, I love that. And Freeman?
And I always appreciate history, and I look at our country. And while people say, oh, we've never been this divided before. Yes, we have been in the 60s, in the 1860s, in the 1960s. You know, and you go back, everybody loves that play, Hamilton. Well, we forget that in that play, one forefather kills another, you know, with guns, right? You see. So don't tell me we haven't been here before when Congress people were beating somebody else with a cane, right? So we've had these experiences before. I say that to say this, that the hope comes because of our belief in ourselves. We talk about communal hope. We believe in this country. We believe in higher education. We would not be here today. Average lifespan is so much longer now because of higher education and science, you see, and the work in the humanities, how we treat people. So my hope comes because of my faith in humankind and my faith in higher education, that we can be better than this. We are in a challenging time, but we believe in our country, for example, and we can be better than we are. And higher education is a major part of that solution. It really is. And so Lynn and I would not see ourselves as retired, but rather at another stage in our lives. You know, I said, I made the mistake of telling people I was retiring from UMBC. I graduated from UMBC after 30 some years. This is, and there's a Browning quote, grow old along with me, the best is yet to be. And my wife and I, after 50 years of marriage, really believe that. I think for all of us and for CFOs, my advice to you is the same advice I give to college presidents. Take care of yourselves. Take care of your own health. Get that exercise in. Make yourself laugh. Don't take it too seriously. Don't take yourself too seriously. That this don't get in the bubble and just stay there. Look at the larger picture. And don't forget the purpose of all of this. We are making lives better. And we are trying to include as many people as possible. And so I want to end with the words I used throughout the darkest days at UMBC. At the end, everybody expected me to say, keep hope alive. And that is still the message today. Keep hope alive.
I love that. I could talk to both of you all we could talk for the rest of the evening. And we've come to the end of our time together for this conversation. I might love to continue it later. But I just want to thank you both for taking the time out For us, I want to thank our listeners for joining us. And just to remind everyone that there is a link to the book, The Resilient University, How Purpose and Inclusion Drive Student Success. It can be found along with our other resources on our Nakubo and Brief webpage. You can see, I don't know if folks can see, but you know, those who are watching can actually, thank you for doing that. Can
actually no change.
Getting nuggets of wisdom there. But thank you both. This has been a wonderful conversation.
Thank you, Kara.
Thank you. We're proud of you, Kara.
Thank you.